Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
And
Andrew Unterberger, a senior editor at Billboard.com.
So Trevor, are you allowed to talk about why you were out of the office last week?
Yeah, I guess I can. I guess no one knew because we had an episode last week, so there was nothing skipped in that sequential universe. I was called out to do my civic duty last week and participate in the good old Sixth Amendment trial by jury process. I was not the person who was afforded the trial by jury because I was not on trial, but I was a juror.
You're an alternate juror. I'm just saying, like you didn't actually serve. Let's give the people the truth.
So I was out as a juror. Then an alternate juror, I found out, unfortunately, when it came time to deliberate and pass a sentence. So
is that disappointing just because at that point you've put in the time?
A little bit. I guess it was kind of nice that I got to go home pretty like sooner than that because the part really, you know, is that there's no specified end date or time. You can deliberate for as long as it takes. And I mean, this was a pretty, I guess, not to demean anybody's lawsuit, but you know, it's a pretty low stakes criminal case, so it wasn't like it was the OJ trial or as I found out, the Harvey Weinstein trial, which will be held in that building come July. So it wasn't like, you know, there was, you know, weeks of deliberation to, you know, figure this out. So
Correct me if I'm wrong. You were actually hoping that it would go a little bit longer, right? You were enjoying the experience.
I really did like it. I have to say, I know a lot of people, you know, when they hear that, they're like, oh my God, jury dude, no, kill me, get out. You know, I'll just get up there and say I'm a murderer and I can get out, you know, that afternoon. And it's like, no, like I actually, really. I mean, it was fascinating to hear multiple people try and tell the same story, at least tell the same story from different points of view. I mean, it's funny because you don't know if that's like intentional or it's like lapses in memory because this event occurred about 10 months ago. So it's one of those things where I guess it's funny because maybe you just don't realize that it's going to come back in 10 months, especially if you're not the person who's going to file the lawsuit. So, but yeah, it was actually really, honestly, really, really cool. I wish it had gone a little bit longer. Something, I mean, this was, I guess, somewhat higher stakes. It wasn't like a technical crime. It was actually like two people, like in a physical confrontation.
Did you find out what the verdict was and would you have agreed with it if you had deliberated?
So funny enough, I couldn't be in the room. Because I didn't have an actual casting vote. But I did today actually go through the public record system to find out what happened. And it was pretty easy to navigate. So shout out to nycourts.gov or whatever. But yeah, I found out I actually would have disagreed. I mean, my initial thoughts, it has to be unanimous. So I'm sure that, you know, there had to be some deliberation and maybe I could have been persuaded, but they ended up actually, I was a little surprised. And I guess they did it relatively quickly.
By the way, I'm not sure that confessing a murder is the easiest way to get out. Or maybe it's the easiest, but I don't know if it's the most efficient way to get out of jury duty.
Well, I mean, if you're
I feel like that might lead to other problems that might leave you tied up slightly longer than jury duty.
Well, I'm just saying that maybe, you know, this has been – if it's done and dusted, you know.
So you're saying like – you're saying I have been a murderer in the past and I've been tried for it.
Right.
And,
got my pardon and, you know, we're all good to go.
Well, they might have ways of checking that, but okay. It's one strategy, I suppose.
Well, good news is, Trevor, you're back in time for the podcast.
Yeah, I was – wow. I was – yeah, in the jury box just sweating the whole time, wondering if we were going to get out by Tuesday at 4 because who, Judge? I don't know. I don't know how to break it to him.
All right. Well, Andrew, part of the reason you're here this week, we're going to be talking artists that really changed their sound more than other artists over the years, influenced by Ed Sheeran's latest debut on the Billboard Hot 100. I was thinking how when he started, we – just knew him as pretty much a folk singer-songwriter. Hasn't been that in recent years. So looked into other artists who've been changing their sound over the years, started thinking about that, and it's all a good topic for this week. So we'll get into that this week on the podcast. Yeah, Sheeran and Bieber's new single, I Don't Care, debuts in the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100, which sounds like this.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, one.
Number 10.
So you can take advantage of me. Tell me how's it feel sitting up there, feeling so high, but too far away to hold me. You know I'm the one who put you up there. Name in the sky, does it ever get lonely? Thinking you could live without me. Thinking you could live without me.
Number 9.
Can we just talk? Just talk about where we're going before we get lost. Let me out of thoughts. Can't get what we know without falling. I've never felt like this before.
Number 8.
I promise that you'll never find another like me.
Number 7.
Look what you made me do. I'm with somebody new. Ooh, baby, baby, I'm dancing with a stranger. Look what you made me do. I'm with somebody new. Ooh, baby, baby, I'm dancing with a stranger.
Number 6.
Then you're left in the dust. Unless I stuck by you. You're a sunflower. I think your love would be too much, or you'd be left in the dark.
Number 5.
It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow. 100 bands in my pocket, it's on me. Yeah, your grandma will probably know me. Get more bottles, these bottles are lonely. It's a moment when I show up, God, I'm saying wow.
Number 4.
I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type, make your girlfriend mad type, might seduce your dad type. I'm the bad guy.
Duh. Number 3.
I'm a sucker for you. Say the word and I'll go anywhere blindly. I'm a sucker for you. Yeah. Any road you take, you know that you'll find me. I'm a sucker for all the subliminal things no one knows about you. About you. About you. About you. And you're making my typical me break my typical rules. It's true. I'm a sucker for you.
Number 2.
Cause I don't care when I'm with my baby, yeah. All the bad things disappear. You're making me feel that maybe I am somebody. I can deal with the bad nights when I'm with my baby, yeah.
And number 1.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
I got the horses in the back. Horse stock is attached.
Okay, third week in a row, there's a new song at number 2. A few weeks back, we heard Taylor Swift get up there with Me Last week, Shawn Mendes, If I Can't Have You. This week, we got Ed Sheeran, Justin Bieber, I Don't Care. None of them have been able to, with all their collective mighty star power, dethrone the track that is number one for a seventh week now on the Hot 100. That is Old Town Road, the one and only Lil Nas X featuring Billy Ray Cyrus. I mean, essentially, at this point, the fact that all these monster singles cannot stop it just goes to show what a, I mean, just barreling down the road more and more and more. Of course, if you're a betting person, go ahead and pencil in an eighth week at number one for Old Town Road. Now that the long-awaited, very much teased, what's it going to be, who's going to be in it, what's it going to be like music video finally came out last Friday. So, yeah, after months, it really feels like months at this point of talking about the video, it's out, came out on Friday, which somebody is a good strategizer at Columbia Records because that means all 7 days of the music video will be in next week's tracking week. You can expect, I mean, the song is untouchable now. Just imagine now this extra element and kind of the last major missing piece of the total streaming domination is there. It's 8 weeks at number one to tie Ariana Grande for the longest this year so far. Seems like a really sure bet.
Yeah, it's been so far ahead of the competition each week, and with the video next week, likely another big bump. I think we should probably open the discussion at this point. How long is it going to be number one? And are we already talking
record? No, we're only halfway. No,
not even halfway there.
I'm gonna project in the future, and you know we're basically halfway there. But I mean, eight weeks in this landscape is so many weeks. I mean, it's not like we have the good old release calendar where we can just kind of pinpoint, well, Kendrick's not coming back till here, or Adele's not coming back till here. I mean, it could be tomorrow that Rihanna says, yo, check it out, it's coming Friday. And
yeah,
I mean, that being said, of course, Taylor couldn't do it so far. Sean couldn't do it so far. Ed Sheeran, Justin Bieber couldn't do it so far. So, I mean, like, except Adele?
And we'd be looking at end of July, so next couple months, really.
All right, but is the advantage still at the point, do you think, where it really is you're gonna need like a major star with a major release to come out and beat it? Or is it possible that something else can just kind of steadily gain on it in metrics, and eventually Old Town Road will start to sag a little once the music video's momentum sort of dies down?
I mean, radio has really kicked in for this song. It's huge on radio now. So even though the streams have started to come down, and I don't know at what rate people thought it would start to come down. I mean, that radio support, which I don't know many people thought that was going to be as big a factor as it has been, is up there. And even sales. I mean, sure, sales don't do it in terms of volume a whole lot, but the fact that it was, for the past 4 weeks, the top-selling song of the week, now it's number two. And, you know, people are, of course, thinking hip-hop songs really don't sell very well. Everyone's just streaming it. Interestingly, I will say that the original Old Town Road I saw right before coming in here is already down to 21 on Spotify. Part of that is because of Tyler, the Creator, with the new album. So kind of course, the debut week is going to get some of that going. But, you know, there obviously are signs that it's starting to slip a little. But just because it's – I mean, even if it's just slipping at that steady amount each week.
Yeah, it went from 104 million to 103 million this week. And again, the video impact will be next week. So small decreases.
Peter Rosenberg at Hot 97 says the song's over. He has declared it as such.
He has. Oh, well, someone alert the Gary. Does he yank it off the Hot 100?
I will say goes to number one this week on the Rhythmic Songs chart, goes to number one on mainstream R&B hip hop, also goes number one on Dance Mix Show Airplay. The other angle with that, Billy Ray Cyrus has his first airplay number one since Achy Breaky Heart, 1992.
Yeah, if you're having two number one hits 27 years apart, that's pretty impressive.
So number two, as you mentioned, Trevor, Ed Sheeran and Justin Bieber debut. Again, yeah, about half the points of Old Town Road. So
how many streams in particular did this song get?
Yeah, so 34.1 million streams in its first week. It's actually number three, Billie Eilish, Bad Guy, number two with almost 40 million. And then again, 103 million for Old Town Road. So
about a sizable advantage.
Third, yeah. Also in the top five, just before we get back to Ed Sheeran and his evolution, Billie Eilish has her first top five Hot 100 hit as Bad Guy goes from nine to number four. Gains across the board, number two in streaming again, between I Don't Care at number three and Old Town Road at number one. At the same time, she gets her first airplay chart number one.
Billie.
Bury a Friend goes number one on the alternative airplay chart. Andrew, you were talking about Billy months ago and this song. Does that surprise you that it's a number one alternative?
I was on this this very podcast, I think, with my co-writer Lindsay Havens, and I was yelling about how Bury a Friend was still below Barnes Courtney's 99 on the alternative songs chart. I think they were both in like the high teens at that point. And alternative, I guess, has finally realized the error of its ways, or at least seized on the opportunity that it was not seizing on previously. Billie Eilish is the biggest star in alternative music in half a decade, a very long time. And they're finally recognizing her as such. And Bury a Friend is number one, and it should be.
All right. So going back to Ed Sheeran and Justin Bieber, and Ed Sheeran started, and lyrically too, a song like A-Team. Lego House is a little more of a typical lyric you might hear in pop music, but very folky, very singer-songwriter, and really lasted for pretty much one album because he was working with Pharrell after that, and he's gone much more pop since then. So I started thinking about artists over the years who've either had one sound that's pretty much stayed throughout. If Rolling Stones may be a great example. A new Rolling Stones song can kind of sound similar to what they were doing 50 years ago.
Although, they dabbled in disco, they dabbled in new wave. They certainly let their sound be influenced by the times. But
to adapt to survive, also, right?
That's certainly true. Certainly, compared to some of their peers, a Rolling Stones song in 1964 could be a Rolling Stones song in 1994 and 2014, et cetera.
Yeah. James Taylor, Elton John, Billy Joel, similar kind of classic from the 70s. Sometimes isn't all that different. To me, it comes down to the songwriting. A great song, if it sounds the same sonically, it's about the song for me.
Sure. And just going back to Ed Sheeran for a minute, I think I was writing about this a little bit earlier this week, but it's very much in parallel to me with the kind of path that Taylor Swift, his good buddy Taylor Swift's career took, where every album is just a little bit, a little bit further over the line to pop music, to the point where four albums in, when you send out this kind of subject prompt saying, "Oh, we'll talk about how Ed Sheeran and how dramatically he's evolved," and I was like, "Oh, I guess he has." I hadn't thought about that, but it's been so gradual that it never felt conspicuous. It never felt like, "Whoa, like what's he doing on this song?" It just felt, it was a short gap from the A-Team to Sing, and then a short gap from Sing to Thinking Out Loud, and then Thinking Out Loud to Shape of You, and now here we are.
He's trained as well.
Yeah, he has indeed, and he's very smart, and so was Taylor, and doing the same thing from her first album, Tim McGraw, going to the Red era, and then to 1989, and now we don't even think of her as a crossover artist in the same way. We just think of her as a pop star.
All right, so let's go back to the 60s, 70s. We'll go forward for a different act. We'll go around the room. She loves you, yeah. If you trace the Beatles from 1964 to 1970, really after that, probably the first couple years when it was the real sugary power pop, like She Loves You, so different from I'm the Walrus and just the ride that they went on, and maybe the different influences, whatever was influencing them to do more psychedelic sounds in the late 60s.
That's, sure, there are mitigating factors.
That's an all-time example of an act that just – and so quickly you realize, gee, that was only about 6 years that happened.
Yeah, so I found a quote from an old there's a Spin magazine issue where they did a list of the 50 best bands of all time. And, of course, the Beatles were number one. I remember they said in the intro, and I found out the exact quote for this, imagine if over the course of 5 years, NSYNC evolved into Radiohead, into the Chemical Brothers, and into Nirvana. And that's pretty much it. I mean, like you said, they started off as a boy band. They ended up at the kind of the peak of experimental rock but towards the end of their career. And they ended up the consummate album artists and creating these kind of rock symphonies and – It was certainly a stark evolution, and so compressed into a relatively short time span. I mean, there's some artists that take 5 years in between albums, let alone basically living an entire career in that time span. So yeah, I think they're still probably the gold standard for evolving as artists, at least within the band format, especially.
George Harrison had a decent amount of, I mean, certainly with his voyages across the world. From what I read of Beatles lore, that probably played actually a big factor. That obviously Lennon McCartney get most of the star power and the credit and the recognition, but I think that also underlyingly helped as well. I mean, soon after the concert for Bangladesh is kind of one of your first big solo projects after that. That's a statement that, you know, he's been working on certainly for years up until that point.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the Lennon McCartney solo catalogs, that would, I don't think one is really that much more traditional than the other. Lennon, he did like old rock and roll cover albums, and he did, you know, his half of Double Fantasy was very kind of maudlin and ballad heavy, and, you know, whereas Paul McCartney, like around the time that John Lennon was doing Just Like Starting Over, which was, you know, his first posthumous hit, McCartney was doing McCartney 2, which is this really gonzo weird synth pop album that sounds like nothing else in the McCartney catalog. So it's not like McCartney was averse to chance taking. It's not like Lennon didn't play it safe. And as Trevor said, you know, George Harrison obviously played a big part in that too. Maybe Ringo too. I mean, I don't go too deep into the Ringo solo catalog, but certainly, you know, the Beatles were some of their four members, and each one of them played the part and pushed them in different directions.
And even as much as they went from pop to rock, they left us with Let It Be and The Long and Winding Road. They kind of went all of a sudden to this really older sounding, beautiful music sound at the end.
I think that they were dictating so much of the culture at the time that it was sort of the thing that what they said kind of went, and, you know, they didn't really have a lot of flops. They didn't really have a lot of variance in their single performance or album performance. It was just sort of, okay, these guys were setting the terms and you either followed them or you didn't.
In the event of something happening to me, there is something I would like you all to see.
The 60s really taking us into the 70s. I wonder if a lot of people don't even ever even think of early Bee Gees, or maybe they think the Bee Gees just came along out of nowhere in the mid-70s with disco, but they had top 10s, 60s and 70s before then. You listen to their earliest hits, folky harmonies, very much folk pop, and then ballads, or To Love Somebody, and I Started a Joke, and then it's a great example of an act that hits a current sound, and part of it is their invention, part of it is disco's rise, but that I'm not sure there's a better example of an act that took advantage of a sound and just completely years into their career made it their defining sound.
Yeah, and even if you look at their first number one hit on the Hot 100, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart, I mean, that's just a ballad. That has nothing to do with disco or funk or any of the sort of the 70s soul sound that they're associated with. That's basically a British Invasion song after the fact. But yeah, I mean, those early songs are really good too, and I think probably more people are more familiar with them than they even realize. They might, you know, associate them with a different actor, just kind of think of them as in the landfill of oldies radio. But yeah, I mean, those disco hits became so iconic so quickly, and they've stayed that way. That, you know, it's if you were to look at their 60s catalog, they'd be more in line with like a, you know, like a Jerry and the Pacemakers, or you know, like maybe the Animals, but not like the Rolling Stones or the Beatles. But they were the Rolling Stones or the Beatles of the 70s. So it's only natural that their 60s stuff would be overshadowed by comparison.
It's pretty much overnight here. I'm looking at their catalog, and they had a couple songs that peaked at 94 and 93 on the Hot 100, and 73 and 74. And then 1975, Jive Talkin' hits number one. After that, Nights on Broadway. And those are not quite as full-on disco as Stayin' Alive and Night Fever, but it obviously shows at that point where they were going pretty suddenly.
But as we sort of alluded to when you were talking about the Rolling Stones there, like this was not a unique occurrence in the mid to late 70s of previously undance affiliated bands just going disco. And I mean, pretty much everybody did it. You'd be hard pressed to find
the Kiss reference.
Sure, Kiss were in there too. Rod Stewart certainly famously. Chicago had a disco song. It really is.
Barbra Streisand even got it on the act.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there was like an Ethel Merman disco album at some point. That's just how big disco was at the time, was that, and I guess the Bee Gees kind of set the template. So now if you had a rock band, if you were a major label and you had a rock band on your roster, you would probably push them in that direction because the template had been proven and the Bee Gees had success beyond their wildest dreams. And even a lot of these flukier bands that you haven't come to associate with disco since, they had one-offs that were pretty successful. Miss You by the Rolling Stones was number one hit. Do You Think I'm Sexy by Rod Stewart, also a number one hit. So yeah, I mean, there were a number of bands that were, you know, whether by choice or just by critical context, they sort of had to reinvent themselves at this point.
And the downside of that is you can get Chris Isaak once interviewed him, and he said part of the reason of his longevity, and he's had one major hit, Wicked Game, that people know, but he can still sell out shows, and he's pretty much kept a sort of similar rockabilly sound, but he was very proud of the fact that
I never caught a trend, and I never got caught by a trend. I was never I was never the guy that had, you know, red lipstick and hair extensions, and then all of a sudden had to go, oh, those pictures of me with red lipstick and hair extensions. I just, you know, I remember in the beginning somebody told me at Warner Brothers, they said, I came by and I had been surfing out in Los Angeles because I never got to L.A., and I'm from near San Francisco, and I came down there and I'd been surfing and I was all tan, and I walked in and they said, well, you look like in real good shape. And I said, well, I've been surfing all day and all this week or something. And they go, well, you should take your shirt off in your video, and you should take your shirt off live on stage. And I said, that's not what I'm selling. And I said, and I'll be ridiculous. My band would laugh at me. And I said, and then years from now, what am I going to do when I can't take my shirt off? I'll be washed up. I said, I'm going to wear a suit. And man, that's the smartest thing I ever did. I'm glad I'd be taking my shirt off, and women would be going, oh, I'm going to get sick. I want to see this.
When something is that eventually kind of mocked like disco was, the downside is you can unfortunately get caught up in that even years after.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say that it's still probably true to this day that the Gibbs don't necessarily get the respect that they deserve for being, you know, among the greatest hit makers of the Hot 100 era and, you know, the sort of the preeminent hit makers of their time, along with Donna Summer and Elton John, a couple other people, because they were so closely associated with disco.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, I want to shout out to some of the artists who were successfully able to break out of the old Motown machine, in particular. Probably, I guess if you have to give one the biggest claim, I would say Marvin Gaye, certainly. I mean, you take a 60s material, which is very much in the classic Motown wheelhouse of, you know, the duets with Tammy Terrell, You All Need to Get By, the short little 2.5 minute, you know, verse-chorus, kind of easy, feel-good structure. Flip it to the 70s, start obviously with What's Going On, and I mean, that whole album, not just, I mean, even, of course, the context of the political message of the song and much more purposeful meanings behind the songs rather than just sort of really feel good, well-crafted, you know, tooled songs to become big pop hits. But, you know, you look at that and that's sort of one side of it. Longer songs, meditations, much more, the production of a lot more purposeful and specific. But then you go to something like Let's Get It On, even, which is a song that, you know, it's a perfectly, like, one of the best 70 songs out there, but it just feels there's nothing going to be that overt, that sexual, that forward that's going to come out of 1960s Motown by any means. I mean, you know, everything sort of had to be pretty whitewashed and keep it clean and for the kids. And so anything, I mean, Let's Get It On, the title, no way that was going to fly back then. And then you've got something like, if you look at other number one hits, Got to Give It Up, which, first of all, it's like 7.5 minutes, which is, I'm sorry, that's much too long for a song. Love the edit, though. The edit's good, but, you know, he jumped into that disco pool, and greatly enough for him, you know, it wasn't like he was any sort of culture vulture or anything like that, but just to show that even just in those quick successions between 71, 73, 75, you got three different sides of a guy who was kind of pigeonholed and pinholed into one style, just like most of those whole artists on the label were, but so few of them really. You know, when you think of a lot of artists, you think of them as a Motown artist. You know what that means when you hear what kind of song that's going to be, what that's going to be like. And even though Marvin was Motown all the way through, you really get a much fuller picture and sense of who he was as a person, which unfortunately a lot of other artists were not able to do.
That's a good point about lyrics too, with artists becoming more socially conscious. John Lennon, a song like Imagine, wouldn't have done probably back in 1964. The Eagles, Don Henley, they got more in that kind of style as well. So yeah, the more you get to know these artists, the more causes that are important to them come out as well. Artist who broke through in the 90s. Is anyone, you guys, you familiar with Alanis Morissette's pre-Jagged Little Pill music?
I mean, I'm aware that it exists, but I can't say that I've ever heard it.
Yeah, she had two albums
in Canada.
Yeah,
and this was before the internet, they were available in Canada. You couldn't really even get them in the U.S. Unless,
yeah, so were you familiar with those before Jagged Little Pill came out?
No.
You couldn't get those over Spotify?
When I was working in radio in the mid-90s.
You can't get over Spotify today.
There was someone who had one of the CDs and brought it into the radio station. I think I taped it somehow. And that was
before the old bootleg.
That's how you got stuff.
Very shady, Gary.
Yeah, she started as this dance pop artist and she was on TV. She kind of had this whole similar in some ways to Drake, being on TV first and then becoming what we would know them more as.
It kind of sounds like some of those early Celine Dion kind of like upbeat, Love Can Move Mountains-y kind of songs. Yeah. Like that's the lane that I guess Terminal, she was trying
early,
to go for.
Early deep Celine Dion cuts. But yeah, then when Jagged Little Pill came along and she got a little flack for that, the more people dug into her story, can we believe your angst after all?
Well, I think of along with that, the original Tori Amos was going back to like the hair metal days, she was the front woman for an act called Why Can't Tori Read. And if you see the shots of her from those days, she has the gigantic hair and it very much seems to be playing into the times. But she switched it up for the singer-songwriter thing too in the 90s. And I think, I don't know, maybe that was a subplot in both artists' very early days, but I think they were since quickly forgotten about and now are just basically a footnote to their stories at best.
All right, what do you got from the 90s?
You gotta fight!
We'll talk about the Beastie Boys a little bit, who I guess sort of see having a similar trajectory on the rap track as the Beatles had in rock. Not to call them the Beatles of rap music, but they started off this very kind of straightforward frat boy rap rock hybrid, and then they got very quickly deeper into sampling and into sort of very dense production and really making kind of Beatlesque, not quite concept albums, but albums that are where the sort of individual tracks are inseparable from one another with Paul's Boutique. And then they got rid of the samples altogether and they went back to playing their instruments on Check Your Head and Ill Communication. And then they sort of went they kind of ended their career by going all the way back to the beginning with the throwback hip hop albums like Hello Nasty, Into the Five Boroughs. So again, they sort of evolved very rapidly in a very short period of time. And also, I got to mention Radiohead, who's sort of the gold standard for just completely chucking behind their early days and their hit making days. Even though they had obviously tremendous success in the post grunge mold with Creep, and then to a lesser extent in the U.S. with the Bends, which had a couple radio hits that don't really get talked about as much as Creep. That was the album that I first heard of theirs, and it was pretty big at the time. But the Britpop was a huge thing in the U.K. and grunge was sort of dying in the U.S. And they just made a complete left turn, first with OK Computer, which was sort of more in a Pink Floyd, almost prog rock mold, and then with Kid A, which sort of jetted the rock mold entirely for something more electronic, more experimental, more ambient spots. And that was their first number one album on the Billboard 200 albums chart, which is still pretty incredible to think about. But that's still a move that I think of today when you talk about an artist just completely changing their sound, especially one that's had commercial success, but they just go complete left turn with it and still stay on that same sort of commercial those commercial heights. I consider it like pulling a Radiohead, pulling a Kid A. That's still like an iconic thing to me.
And sort of maybe a weird comparison, but I'm thinking of the Bee Gees when you say that, because the more the extreme you go to, it's can some ways be maybe harder to change your sound from there. So when you go all people know you as disco, where do you go after that? When grunge was just so definitive as a sound, how do you change your sound for that when people know that's what you are?
Sure. I mean, and there's plenty of stories in rock history of artists doing that and it being met with tepid at best response and reviews. You know, Lou Reed, Neil Young, certainly like went through any number of you know, cosmetic career changes over the course of their 40 years or 50 years. But usually when they went in, when they had one of these complete about faces, it was kind of met with confusion and, you know, disastrous charting returns and certainly nothing on the level of Kid A, where that's still considered one of the best albums of the century. And, it was a charting hit and I think nominated for a couple of Grammys and certainly like considered one of their peaks both artistically and commercially. So I mean it's hard enough to convincingly reinvent yourself, but to be accepted for it as well is pretty impressive.
Into the 2000s, Pink started really as a almost this TLC kind of a rhythmic artist.
Before there was Blackpink, there was Black Pink.
Yeah, it was. I remember when I was again working in adult radio, we wouldn't touch anything from the first album, and then Get the Party Started came along, and it was a little bit more of a shift. Okay, yeah, this kind of works, but she's still maybe not quite a core artist for us. And ever since somewhere in the mid 2000s, and really started with the big comeback with You in Your Hand, and Who Knew. Ever since then, it's been over a decade of she's about as automatic as you can get for an adult pop rock artist, pretty much.
Yeah. She seems like one of those artists who, yeah, she kind of rode that, yeah, that, I guess that TLC, Destiny's Child-y kind of wave with like Most Girls and There You Go. And I remember, you know, she had all the attitude and she had all that. And people, you know, elementary school, middle school ate that up. And then and then she makes that shift with the third album to go rock with on Try This with like Trouble and that kind of thing. And, you know, I guess it, like always when it doesn't match up commercially, that kind of leads to this weird period of what are we gonna do now, and then, you know, had the Stupid Girl song that's at least kind of a fun in the sense that it parodied a lot of the celebrity, you know, Paris Hilton's, the Lindsay Lohan's at the time, and then you're right, then it comes back with Funhouse and a lot more just straight down the middle pop and maybe a little more adult, which it had kind of been there before but never really fully expressed. And I mean, that really has been the sound of the last decade that's just carried her. It's just so funny to think of, like, I haven't seen Pink in concert, but I really would love to see, like, how those songs all mesh together. Because, I mean, I'm sure she could do it, but it'd just be kind of fun to go from, you know, from Most Girls, yeah, or You Make Me Sick to A Glitter in the Air or Just Like Home or something.
I mean, the thing with Pink is that it never really – like whether she was doing something more in a hip-hop mold or a rock mold or a dance mold or a straightforward pop mold – never really felt inauthentic to me. It always just kind of felt like Pink. Like I never, at least like in real time when she was kind of going about her career evolution, I never really thought of any of her leaps in sound from one genre to the other as being that jarring, because it just sounded like her to me. I don't know. Like the attitudes sort of stay consistent throughout the various projects and the various sounds. So to me, like, I mean, you're right that if you were to play like Most Girls and Glitter in the Air back to back, it would seem shocking that they're by the same artist. But to me, like that's just like a career's evolution to me. That never felt like, oh, okay, let's try this now. I mean, despite her literally calling it an album, Try This, and it never felt like she was jumping on a bandwagon, and it never felt like she was, you know, working on a label mandate. Okay, now you're going to be a rock artist. Now you're going to be an R&B artist. Now you're going to be like, I thought of her as hip hop when she first came out. I remember like she and Eve kind of came out around the same time. I didn't know what either looked like, but I always sort of associated them together because I thought that that's their song sounded sort of similar to me.
I mean, that's a good point, I guess, about the lyrics too. Again, like when you listen to a song like So What, or I mean, even a song like You in Your Hand, literally just from that title. Yeah, I mean, it's like, she did keep that same energy. She didn't try to become some balladeer or something. And she said, you know, a long time ago, she said that she never wanted to be one of those artists who just stood up there and sang love songs they didn't meet or anything. Sure. So there's always been not this authenticity to her music. And even the call out way back, what's with the call out in, was it just like a pill?
Or oh, like, don't want to be goddamn Britney Spears.
Yeah,
or
like, yeah. She's like kind of countering don't that let me LA get me. Don't let me get me. Yeah, yeah, right, when, yeah. When like she's like, like I guess that's shout out to LA Reid that they're telling her, you know, oh, we're gonna be this big pop star or whatever. You just got to be like, you know, Britney or Christina or somebody. She's like, fuck that. I'm never gonna be that. And yeah, I mean, just keeping that sense of self, I think, has really been a huge, huge, huge reason she's lasted so long.
I told you if you called, I would come running across the highs and lows and the in-between. You and me, we've got two minds, I think as one.
Also Pink folk music, the duo You and Me with Dallas Green put out a folk album.
Underrated album.
Yeah.
That's it. Oh, yeah, Rose Ave, yeah.
Oh, like 5 years ago.
All right, similar era. They started as a rock band. Maroon 5.
How much rock credit are we going
to
give them?
Well, Harder to Breathe was an alternative hit. That's, cool. That's
what
they made there.
Wasn't a huge alternative.
Well,
hit,
but I mean, it's pretty crunchy though. Song. It's, I mean.
Yeah, they quickly obviously went to This Love.
Yeah, and, I mean, it was interesting to me watching them at the Super Bowl because it was sort of the distillation of them at their rockiest, I guess. Because I mean, and maybe that's just the sort of live Maroon 5 experience. I know like we've interviewed various members of them for Billboard, and they're like, yeah, people come to our shows. They don't realize that we're like an actual band that plays actual rock music. Fair. But yeah, I'm sort of with Trevor on this one. I wouldn't say that they really had like a tremendous about face. I would say they were always a – they were always basically a pop band. Then they maybe just got shunted onto alternative radio because, you know, you see a band of four white guys.
And I think people, you know, there's some strategists out there who will argue, you know, easy, you know, if you don't go in on the hardest genre, that's going to be, you know, that's going to be there to break through. I mean, pop was having such a big, you know, hit at the time. There's no reason they're going to play new pop band where they can just play. I mean, same problem people run into today. You know, well, why play you? We can play, I don't know, No Doubt or Britney Spears or whoever, Kelly Clarkson or whoever else was hot at the time. I mean, I you know, I mean, even, and rock, you know, rock pop, I mean, Nickelback and Hoobastank and all the other artists at the time, you know, that was kind of that little line between the two was pretty murky anyway. And I think that was a pretty easy way to kind of get in. And I mean, still a great song. So maybe that's just why they thought to go with that one. But I think it stands out, I guess, more to hear that first than a This Love or yeah. She Will Be Loved or something.
Is the biggest evolution in Maroon 5's music the register that Adam Levine now uses more?
I think you can still hear him do it on those early albums, maybe not on the singles as much, but I don't know. I mean, like She Will Be Loved is pretty upper register, isn't it? It's really in that chorus. It's,
I mean, the hook, yeah. For sure. I mean, I will also say, I mean, another huge jump in their departure. I mean, to think of a rockish band having these early hits in 2004 and then by the mid-2000s collaborating with Future and Kendrick. And I mean, all these, just if you want to call them a rock band, the fact that they went from that to working with, I mean, they know how to grab a hit with an R&B urban artist, SZA, yeah, Kendrick, a Wiz, it just is, you know, pretty interesting.
And even before that, they
jumped on that like that.
Even before that, they were, you know, working with all these like mega pop producers, like they're the Shellbacks and Max Martins of the world. And, you know, rock bands don't really, or at least at the time, didn't really do that to such an extent. They were clearly willing to do what was necessary to get on pop radio. That was definitely the goal.
Yeah. Chick-a-doom, chick-a-doom, chick-a-doom.
Yeah, that's the joint.
Gotta mention the Black Eyed Peas, who started off as a conscious rap act in the late 90s, kind of peers of Jurassic 5 and The Roots, and then they added Fergie, and then they, you know, Will.i.am got more into production and pop music, and sort of over the course of the 2000s, they sort of shed their rap skin and kind of reinvented themselves as electropop robots, I guess. And then by the end of the decade, they were sort of setting the tone for pop music in the decade to come by going totally EDM, hooking up with David Guetta, and having the two biggest hits of 2009. I Got a Feeling in Boom Boom Pow. It's one of the starkest when you look back. It's like, man, like how do they get there from here? It's pretty wild.
Still even odder to me how they just really kind of went out on top. I mean, they had obviously that monster album with The End and three number one hits. Then they had the next album, not number ones, but still top 10 hits and Just Can't Get Enough and Dirty Bit with the sampling of the time. The beginning of the onslaught of 80s samples reworked by Pitbull
like
and others.
That was a good one.
You like the time, Gary? Oh, you're such a sucker for the late 80s.
Bring back Dirty Dance,
of course.
But that, I mean, after that album, you know, went, which was the beginning of ironically titled. Maybe that was, you know, a fun, ironic joke. They just kind of stopped. And then, of course, Fergie left a few years later. But just seems so odd to me that, I mean, with, you know, they have that huge album, they do the Super Bowl, and then they kind of just like are all okay with it being over. I still wonder.
Sort of the same thing happened with a couple people from that period. Same thing happened with LMFAO. They weren't on.
I mean, nobody's on that consistent level in terms of.
So they had two number one hits. How consistent do you want for one album?
Well, but it's only one. I mean, they made right, one fine. Album. Okay. Like, this is a group who's been together for a decade. I mean, they're just moving into like their. I mean, a total. You know, at least maybe not a pop culture domination, but at least a chart culture domination. And you know, to have. I mean, those hits in 09, then that new album in 10 back to back, and then just. I mean, you feel like they almost like owe us at least a flop album, so we can at least say, ah, yes, and this is why the Black Eyed Peas went off into the sunset. But maybe it's just props to them for, you know, recognizing, you know, that that's what they wanted to do and they played on their own terms. But still, just so odd to me how it was so massive, and then it just silenced. Kind of in that Black Eyed Peas mold, somebody who, yeah, you forget those kind of obscure beginnings. Shout out to Catherine Hudson, who we better know as Katy Perry, who started out, of all things, as a Christian singer, really influenced by her parents, who are very religious, as she's mentioned several times. Did a couple albums as a Christian artist. I mean, not that those were expected to be big commercial successes or anything in that mold, but really found her footing, of course, soon after that with her own pop stardom and
embracing humanism.
She went to the dark side, and I mean, of course, you know, the statement of "I Kissed a Girl" is your first song, and I'm sure that probably still causes, you know, some ruffled feathers in the Hudson household. But yeah, I mean, really, you know, just to break out of that mold and become this full fledged goofy, nothing's off limits pop star.
It is something that struck me recently hearing "I Kissed a Girl" for the first time in a couple of years. I don't know when the last time I heard it was. It sounds a lot more like it's a lot more of a rock song than I remember.
Yes.
It being.
I mean, when you hear like just from the opening like chords, like there's a pronounced guitar underneath.
Yeah, when I was listening to it, I was like, man, the thing that this really reminds me the most of is like a turn of the century Marilyn Manson song. Like it's got that same sort of like doomsday stomp to it that really, I mean, when you compare that to something like Roar or like you know, a Birthday from a couple albums after that, like she came a long way herself, Katy Perry. Even as Katy Perry, removing the Catherine Hudson days.
All right. So this decade, we pretty much mentioned them. Ed Sheeran, we pretty much covered. Taylor Swift, who officially had the documented change from country to pop. It's a beautiful night. We're looking for something dumb to do.
Hey, baby, I think I want to marry you. I guess the jury's still out on exactly where this person is going to land, but I feel like
are you an alternate on that jury too?
No, I'm a full voting member.
Okay,
my streams count too. Bruno Mars is, I mean, when you think of what the first couple albums were, I mean, very middle of the road. I mean, good hooks, poppy, up tempo, you know, kind of things for the most part. I mean, Just the Way You Are was kind of that, you know, just a very good, like maybe the pop version of a neo kind of singer songwriter kind of song. Even Grenade, you know, had that same kind of formula. Locked Out of Heaven moved the needle a little bit. I mean, obviously the Police and the 80s comparisons were pretty on the nose, but When I Was Your Man took it kind of back in the middle. So it felt like it was going to be a very, you know, safe top 40, you know, lock kind of guy. Maybe if you want to think of him as maybe a Maroon 5 type, that would be kind of his lane for the longest time. Just, you know, you're cool with him. You know, his songs are, you know, great for high school first dances, but you know, your mom's like him. So he's just, what a guy. And then Uptown, then Uptown Funk comes out. And I don't know if that was, you know, how far ahead that was planned about 24 Karat Magic. But then, I mean, just like Andrew was saying with The Weeknd. Okay, now Bruno dances. Now he's got a little swag to him. Now he's got more flair and, you know, his costume choices. And
yeah, the fashion became very important.
Incredibly important. I mean, the Super Bowl with the afro and, you know, the full black jumpsuits, things that, you know, 2012 Bruno probably would have never been able to pull off. And then, of course, I mean, the music, 24 Karat Magic, full-on R&B album, very much owed to, as he mentioned in the Album of the Year Grammy speech, the Baby Faces, the Jimmy Jams, the Terry Lewis's. This is not, you know, just sort of a straightforward kind of everybody album. This album has a purpose, it has a point, it has a feel, it has a flow, and of course, that's the last we've really heard of him from a single album, so not sure where he's going to land, and, you know, hopefully, for my take, he doesn't go back to that safe kind of top 40 route. But even if he does, just that jump between the first two albums of Doo-Wops and Hooligans and Unorthodox Jukebox to 24 Karat Magic is, you know, a biggest shift, I think, as we've seen from anybody. And they're all hits. It's, you know, I'm sure the nice thing for Atlantic Records and his sanity that he can make that transition and not lose a single fan.
Oh, I think we're seeing Bruno like very slowly move up the retro timeline. So if 24 Karat Magic was mostly like Gap Band up until the New Jack Swing era, and then Finesse was obviously very the remix of Finesse took it from New Jack Swing into the 90s. Please Me is sort of like a, you know, a Jodeci type ballad. So maybe now we're up to, I don't know, No Diggity Blackstreet or
Jermaine Dupri kind of era. Yeah. Are we looking at, yeah.
Which is good. I think it's about time for that sound.
Maybe a little early Scott Storch in there.
I don't know if we're ready for that yet. Here's an idea. How about New Soul Bruno Mars? How about like Erykah Badu?
I do not want to hear Brunoism. I don't know if I want to.
That's exactly what I want now. Now anything short of Brunoism is going to be an abject failure on Bruno Mars's part.
Wow. Yeah, in Brunoism. Wow, yeah.
I guess one other artist to close on, because she's been so prominent here in 2019, Ariana Grande in our Women in Music, when she won last year, Woman of the Year, talked about how she started sort of along the sound she has now, but in between, something like Break Free. She said, I kind of looks back on that as that's not the sound she really wanted to do, that straight ahead pop dance sound. It seems like she's kind of going back to the sound that she wanted from the beginning when she started with The Way, and then something like Seven Rings and Thank You Next, that's more the sound that she wants to maybe do going forward.
Yeah, I think she is an R&B artist at heart. I think that's where her musical passions lie. I mean, it's half R&B and half musical theater, I think, is the recipe for Ariana Grande. So, yeah, I mean, the Zed songs probably aren't totally where her passions lie. And a couple of those, I don't know, sort of cheesy hip-hop influence songs like Problem and Focus, probably not totally where she wants to be. But, yeah, I think
– Problem is a great song.
It's a good song. But I
can see what you mean.
Yeah. I think she's more at home doing, you know, she's probably more at home doing The Way and that entire Yours Truly first album, and now kind of the more modernized and you know, streaming friendly R&B sound that she has now is that seems to be where she would have pushed herself all along if she had complete control over her career, and now she does. So,
and I guess, I mean, for her, the ultimate vindication's got to be these are the biggest hits.
Oh, yeah.
This is what's successful now. So, you know. Maybe you guys should have listened to her all along.
All right. That wraps things up for the podcast this week. We'll see how the videos play into the Hot 100 next week with Old Town Road and I Don't Care. We'll see if it's a week two battle. The videos are out.
Perhaps most importantly, we'll see if we can get a record-tying fifth song marooned at number two behind Old Town Road.
Yeah, which, again, too early here to tell on Tuesday when we were taping this, but New Halsey.
Yeah, we think Tyler, the Creator, Earthquake. Number one this week across the board.
It's definitely
going to
be his biggest hit yet. I mean, but there's not much competition for that.
But it means, it's been number one all week on Spotify. Oh, yeah. That's something that that Taylor didn't do. Something that I Don't Care didn't do. So
it's going to be his first top 40 hit for sure.
Well, I mean, talk about a dark horse, but we'll see.
All right, Halsey, another artist who's kind of gone from different sounds.
Well, I considered mentioning her.
Yeah, it kind of takes us back to newer Americana a little bit, more of her pop rocky side than some of the pop rhythmic stuff she's been doing.
This song, Nightmare, the new song, sounds the most like what I pictured Halsey like sounding like in her own head. I feel like, maybe this is slightly, you know, prejudiced because I, you know, I I miss guitars and pop music, and I miss rock music in general being kind of a more of a mainstream concern. But she was an emo kid. She was a pop punk fan. She loved Blink 182, as sung about on the Chainsmokers' Closer. And this sounds like the song that Halsey was always destined to make, and I hope it is as successful as some of her other songs.
Well, from Halsey's head to your ears, here it is. Here's a snippet of her new track. Check it out. It's called Nightmare.
So save me your prayers. I keep a record of the wreckage of my life. I gotta recognize a little bit of my mind. They talk shit, but I love it every time. And I realize I keep a record of the wreckage of my life. I gotta recognize a little bit of my mind. They talk shit, but I love it every time. And I realize in your sweet dream that I'm a hell of a night. That I'm no sweet dream, but I'm a hell of a night.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.